Welcome to episode 32 of How to Be a STEMinist. Today I'm interviewing Melissa Bagley and Justin Padinsky, who are co-deans of the awesome foundation STEAM chapter. So STEAM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Maths. Stick around if you've ever wanted to support people around the world on their STEAM careers and projects, but didn't know how. This is the How to Be a STEMinist podcast. I'm your host, Tiffany, a proud woman in STEM. To me, being a STEMinist means creating a wildly fulfilling career without compromising your family or social life. Because when you love your whole life, you become a living example that a career in STEM is where it's at. I'm on a mission to equip women in STEM around the world with strategies to take back control of their career progression, navigate those difficult and awkward gender equality issues, and stop balancing work with life and start enjoying it. If you want to learn all the things no one else teaches you about being a woman in STEM, you've come to the right place. Let's get stuck in. Hey STEMinists, I am so thrilled to be sharing today's interview with you. I sat down virtually with Melissa and Justin late last week to talk all things Awesome Foundation and philanthropy when it comes to funding STEAM projects. Now, although this is the main thing we were supposed to be talking about, I just felt that Melissa and Justin had so much wisdom to share that I kept a lot of the other tangent conversations that we had in this episode, because I think that what they had to say was so inspiring in terms of just going for things. So doing things in the face of fear, figuring stuff out as you go, and always prioritizing excitement and adventure when it comes to all areas of life and career. These are all things that, if you've listened to my previous episodes, I can totally get on board with. And I think this is a great message for you to hear from other people other than me as well. So, as I mentioned before, Melissa and Justin are co-deans of the Awesome Foundation STEAM chapter. So, the Awesome Foundation is a global community advancing the interests of awesome in the universe, $1,000 at a time. Each fully autonomous chapter supports awesome projects through microgrants, which are given out monthly. The microgrants, which are $1,000 or the local equivalent, come out of the pockets of the chapter's trustees and are given on a no strings attached basis to people and groups working on awesome projects. So Melissa and Justin pay out of their own money. They budget $100 a month aside, and they put it into giving it away as part of a grant along with some other trustees as well. Now, I came into contact with Melissa and Justin through an ex-colleague and dear friend, Dana, who I used to work with, and I'm so, so happy that she put us in touch because this episode is full of gold dust. Now, Melissa graduated with her Bachelor of Science in Communication and MBA in Entrepreneurship from the University of Louisville. After graduating, she moved out of Denver, Colorado to launch her career in tech, where she worked in Silicon Valley startups and established software companies. Most recently, Melissa spent the last 2 years living and working in Australia before returning back to the States, where she now resides in Melbourne, Florida. She's currently working on a book about her adventure while actively seeking her next opportunity with a tech startup. And in her free time, you can find her at the beach, exploring a new water sport, or obviously checking out the stock market. Also being interviewed is Justin. He graduated from Alvernia University with a focus on biology, physics, and philosophy. A very interesting combination for sure. He spent his senior year untangling the genetic mysteries from the world's oldest humans, supercentenarians. So these are people who live to be 110 years or older. These days, Justin is the head of partnerships at Alchemist Accelerator. Alchemist is a venture-backed accelerator focused on accelerating the development of seed-stage ventures. It gives companies around $36,000 and runs them through a structured six-month program, heavily focused on sales, customer development, and fundraising. Backed by many of the top corporate and VC funds in the Valley and Europe, including Kozler Ventures, Volvo, Cisco, Siemens, General Electric, and Salesforce, amongst others. The accelerator seeds 75 enterprise monetizing ventures each year. Right now, he is currently based in Las Vegas, Nevada, and outside of work and the Awesome Foundation, you can find him rock climbing, trail running, and eating sushi. Yum. Before we dive into today's interview, I wanted to let you know of a free gift I've got for you. So most people don't know this, but there are 7 really quick and easy actions that will get you noticed at work. These are all things that you can implement right away, and I want you to have them. So do the 7-step STEM career audit to find out how many of them you are already doing, and to figure out which ones you can do to really level up your career effortlessly. You can head on over to www.tiffanydawson.co/career-audit or via the link in the show notes to get the 7-step STEM career audit right now. I am so happy to have you both on the show this morning. We didn't know what time of day it was for Melissa, Justin, and I. So Melissa, what time is it for you and where are you based?
It is 12 noon and I am in Melbourne, Florida.
Okay, and Justin?
It's 9 a.m. here and I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada.
And for me, it's 5 p.m. in Bristol in the UK. So we are covering all times of day. I can tell you it's the end of the day here, but it's been a really good day. So you guys are going to have a great day as well.
That's always good to know the future ahead of time.
Yeah. I'm just giving you a heads up. So as with all of my interviews, I like to start with, what was your journey into STEM? So I know both of you have a STEM background. Melissa, can I start with you? What was your journey into the STEM world?
Yeah, sure. So what got me interested in STEM is when I was younger, my dad was really into computers and kind of the father-daughter thing was building computers. So I was a high schooler that I wasn't a gamer, but I built my own computer and my own desktop. And then when I went into college, I actually applied for engineering school and got in. But at the time, I realized I was just a people person and I didn't understand there was a consulting side of engineering. So with that, I moved into, upon graduation, wanting to work for software companies to kind of get that STEM side.
Oh, amazing. That's so cool. Was your dad an engineer as well?
No, he has a physics degree, but he was a pilot.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's amazing. We should definitely talk about that another time. And yeah. Justin, what was your journey into STEM?
It probably started around 10th grade. I was really into soccer and I just had this like epiphany where I was like, I don't want my whole life to be chasing a ball. And then I picked up, I need to get involved in something else because I don't even know if this is what I want to do for the next 3 years, let alone I was thinking about coaching and doing all this stuff for soccer. And so I started just started reading. I've always been drawn towards contrarians of different fields. And the contrarian at the time was Ray Kurzweil, who now works at Google. But he wrote this book called The Singularity Is Near. And it was just a very, really kind of, actually, it's kind of all over the place, their book. But it just touches some really cool common or modern concepts and really dives into the future of science as well. So then that got me really into it. I started volunteering more. I started joining clubs. And then in college, I just tried to dabble in everything. And I ended up doing, they wouldn't let me do three minors, but essentially I did enough minors to have a minor in physics, chemistry, and bio. And I focused on aging. And then after college, I had no idea if I wanted to do aging, but I wanted to work for a startup. But if you wanted to work for an aging startup, you pretty much had to have a PhD because, you know, the teams were small and they didn't have a lot of, you know, wiggle room with budget to hire all these different, you know, entry level people. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll go to St. Louis where I had some friends who were doing their PhDs. I went out there. They also had a good startup scene. And I saw what they did day in and day out. And I was like, I do not want my PhD. This is not, I'm not ready for this. I don't care if I don't know if I want this. So I was really happy. I got to stay really close with science, you know, scientific people, but I didn't really know if that's what I wanted. And so I took a job for a startup working on enterprise software. It was similar to Slack without 100 million in venture. And I, after 3 or 4 years, I was really missing science. I had sort of have an existential crisis. So I just flew to Hawaii and moved there. I kept working for that startup. Eventually that did not work out. And I took a couple months off and found a company called Alchemist. They are a startup accelerator where they fund tech startups, but they fund a lot of companies in the science and engineering field. In fact, most of the founders that we fund are usually PhDs or master students in science. I'm really glad I get to be back in that field and talk to people who are sort of at the forefront of their field. And we get to write a lot of first checks that are from people who literally are now taking their idea out of the lab into the real world. So it's really cool.
Wow, that's incredible. I loved that with both of your stories. There was a point of time where you were unsure of whether, for Melissa, you weren't unsure how to use your people skills, you know, your love of speaking and gathering other people together. And for you, Justin, you know, you went to Hawaii to try and figure things out. You tried something in tech and in software and you realized you actually liked something else. I think it just goes to show that you don't have to have it all figured out all the
time.
No,
and I still don't.
No, yeah. Who does, right? So I love uncovering these stories just to encourage people that if they feel a little bit lost, so if you're listening and you're feeling a little bit lost, you're not sure what your career is going to end up looking like, it is fine because you will work it out and you'll look back on this time thinking, oh, that's why I took that step. Like, that totally makes sense now.
Yeah, they don't give you a map. You know, you when you go into college or you're going for your degree, you know, okay, you need to take these courses for this. But then after graduation, you have to figure it out and kind of go on your own journey.
Yeah, and I remember in college when I was, we didn't even have an aging program. I just remember getting really interested in that, partially because of Ray Kurzweil and some of his writings. And I just asked my college, I was like, I really want to go to this aging conference in California. You know, how do I get money? And they had this really small program in the sciences to give money for conferences. And I think most big universities have much, much more full-fledged programs for this. But at my university, it was like you had to go into the bowels of the university to even find it because no one knew about it. So I went out there and it was with all of these heavy hitters of the genetics and aging world, like George Church and all of these people that are industry-renowned scientists. And I just remember being there like, I'm a sophomore or junior I was, and these rock stars of the field. I'm like looking at Michael Jordan of, you know, of science. And I just was so nervous. But when I walked up to them, I was like, oh my God, they're more awkward than me. And I just started talking to them. And suddenly, like, you just meet all of these amazing people. And I never had that plan or anything. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a tidbit of advice there, but it's like, just go meet people. Like, connections are still really what drives your career forward.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of meeting people, I discovered the last time when I spoke to you both that you have never met in person, yet you started up this whole arm of an organization together. Can you tell me how you got connected in the first place?
Yeah, so I can kind of start that. So about, I think maybe 4 years ago or so, we were both on this app. It's called Shaper. It's literally the Tinder of networking. There's no romantic side to it. Justin and I are just friends, but you literally swipe for network connections and you can go on there. Some people are looking for co-founders. Some people are looking for mentors, job opportunities. It's just an accelerated way to do networking. Back in that time, for me at least, I was so busy that to go out and meet people wasn't really a thing. Of course, currently in 2020 right now with COVID. I think it's a good way to do that. So we had matched on there. And then at the time, I think Justin was in town in Denver for a work trip. And then by the time we started talking, he had flown out. So we were in different cities. And then over the years, we just checked in about once a quarter. Hey, how are you? Just professionally. Oh, hey, I'm working on this project. Do you have any tips for this based on what you're doing at your company? And I think over that, we just continued to connect on that level, just without having any expectations of what was to come, but just a professional, connection to stay in touch.
I want to touch on something that you mentioned, Melissa, about how you kept in contact without having any expectations. So I know that you kept in contact via LinkedIn after that, wasn't it?
Yes, primarily LinkedIn. And just about once a quarter, Justin was much better about this than I was. About once a quarter, I would get a random message. Hey, Melissa, how are you? I see you're now in Australia. What are you up to these days? And I'd respond back, and then he'd respond back. And then, next time it was the holidays. Hey, I hope you had a great, New Year's or Merry Christmas or Happy Thanksgiving. What have you been up to lately?
I did not know that. Justin of the past always, I have a very short-term memory, and I'm always amazed at what Justin of the past does, because I didn't remember that I messaged you more. I thought you were the person who kept that kind of the conversation going.
Maybe it was a little bit on both sides.
Either way, you kept in contact. And I think the thing that I really wanted to highlight was that you kept in contact without some sort of ulterior motive. I think there, for some reason, networking seems to get a really bad rap, especially when it comes to connecting with people on LinkedIn. I think it gets a bad rap because there are so many people out there trying to sell you random stuff that you don't want, or, I think that they become a bit of a bad example of what networking should be. Whereas I always say that networking is creating genuine relationships. You don't connect with someone just because you want a job or just because you want to win a project off a new client. It really is creating those long-term relationships, and maybe something in the future will happen or maybe it won't. But for you two, something amazing came out of your connection. Could you please tell me a little bit more about the STEAM chapter of the Awesome Foundation, which you started?
The Awesome Foundation, I actually don't even know the full history. I think it started around 2009 or around that time. And there was a guy who wanted to give these no strings attached $1,000 grants. So there's a group of trustees they formed to do 100. So basically each trustee would give $100 out of their own pocket a month. They would create a pool of $1,000. People apply for that $1,000. And then every month they award the winner that money. And again, they can fail. They can do whatever they want with it. And that's the sort of the beauty of it. It's really no strings attached grant. And then from that, all of these different chapters spun out. Most chapters focus on their specific cities. And I think there's around, Melissa, do you know how many chapters there are now? I'm blanking. I want to say 70, but I'm not 100% sure.
I am not sure. I know there's only about 5 or 6 remote ones that are not location dependent, but most are community based.
Yeah. So most are focused
all over the world.
Yep. All over the world. And they're mostly focused on their geographies, which is usually a big city. And I was in the Oahu chapter. I finally had the finances to do this. So when I went to Hawaii, I joined their chapter. It was great. It was a bunch of older women who were just doing it. They were friends for years. And we funded everything from robotics to culture to everything, community events. And it was really amazing what you actually got to see what a passionate person could do with $1,000. But I move around a lot because I just like to travel and I had a remote job. So I ended up going to, I wanted to start this remote chapter. And Melissa, I think you reached out without even knowing that at the time. So, and we didn't even know it was going to be a STEAM focused chapter. We really just wanted to do something remote based. We chose STEAM mostly because it gives us the flexibility to really fund a variety of projects across the globe. And the thinking there was if you can do a lot in America with $1,000 for Steam, you know, what can you do globally with it? And we've already been just super impressed with what the applications we've seen come in. But that's sort of how it all got started. And then we just started spinning it up as we went. We kind of just started it. And then we were like, okay, let's fix the car while it's on the highway. We'll figure out the rest. And it's been going swimmingly so far.
That's incredible. I love that you've just, you know, taken an idea and really run with it. It's definitely a few steps more than most other people would do. I think a lot of people think about doing stuff like this, but never actually create action. Having the two of you put your heads together, I guess you probably encouraged each other to take the next step each time.
I owe it all to Melissa on that one. You know, it's funny, in my day-to-day life, I'm very much proceed with caution, but I just kind of do things. And especially in like rock climbing and adventure sports, I'm really good about not asking a lot of questions and just doing stuff, which is weird. But then when it comes to professional stuff like this, I want to have everything figured out in a nice book. And Melissa was like, we just need to start this thing. Let's just do it and we'll figure out the rest. And why don't we just start with quarterly grants? We'll start giving 100 a month and then we'll get trustees as we go. And she was totally right. We funded a quarterly grant, and then all of a sudden we had, you know, now we have 5 trustees. So starting next month, we're going to be doing bi-monthly grants, and then we're going to work our way up to monthly. And honestly, who knows after that? We could go in a bunch of directions. So I credit so much of this chapter to her, because I would have been stuck in my own head for 6 to 12 months just trying to figure it all out.
I think it was definitely teamwork, but I think it also goes to show something with, because when I did reach out to Justin, it was when we were doing that touch points and I went to his LinkedIn profile to see something specific to ask him about versus just, hey, how's it going? I was like, oh, hey, what's this awesome foundation? It sounds awesome. Can you tell me more?
So when you were starting up your chapter of the Awesome Foundation, did you come across any self-doubts or fears that you had to overcome?
I mean, the first one was, are we going to get enough trustees to do this scalably? I shouldn't have thought it was a fear or a doubt at the time, because even if we're doing them once every 6 months, who cares? It's just fun and we're doing it. That was my first concern, is how are we going to find these trustees? And then also, what area did we want to pick? Because we're now looking at a global pipeline of people who can apply. Are we going to get 0 applications? Or are we going to get 10,000? Like, we had no idea what that scale was going to be like. And if it's 0, well, then we have to do a lot more marketing. If it's a lot, well, then we have to put in place systems to analyze those applications and really, really get good about that. So there was a lot of uncertainty. And I always just try to reframe when I have those kind of fears. I always just heard from, you know, older people, they're like, yeah, you have all of these fears in your head and most of them never come true. And that's been like my guiding light for any project I do, is all of these things you think are going to be roadblocks generally don't end up actually happening. It's sort of like when you go on a date and you picture all the stupid things you'll say or all the things that could go wrong, or even in your day-to-day life, like most of those don't happen. So it's not useful to plan for them. You just have to try to proceed and cherry pick the most important things and just really focus in on those.
I think one more thing to add is, at the beginning, like, we had this idea. We both wanted a remote chapter because we both move a lot. We knew that. Our very first thing was, we went through this intense process of figuring out what we were going to name this chapter. And we started and we came up with like 5 or so names. And then we ended up doing market research, asking our friends, all of this. And then it turned out none of those names ended up being what we went with, because we realized we should do a more focused chapter to make sure we get certain grants that are in a certain subset. So I think that was one of the things. And that's kind of something you just learn along the way. You start to realize, okay, we thought creating the best name was going to be a really important step. And we did the work there. And then we didn't even use any of them. And we just went with something simple that was not simple, but like something that was strategic: STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. And I do have to give credit to Justin for adding the A in there, which was new for me.
So I assume you originally wanted to call it STEM chapter and you changed it to STEAM to include the A. What was the reasoning behind that?
One, I didn't want the process to be limiting, because I think sometimes people overthink what it is to be interested in STEM. Like, you don't need to be a scientist to do a STEM project or to get involved in the field or just be curious about it. And I just wanted to be as broad as possible and include art. For example, I'm very interested in robotics. And often when I see people do robotics-based projects, there's so much art involved. They have to design the robot or the contraption to fit a certain scenario or a very specific budget. And yeah, maybe it's not meant to be aesthetically artistic, but it has to be you have to be extremely creative in the design. And I consider that very similar to an artist. So I always really like that part of science, is that how creative scientists are, but sometimes they don't really think about how creative they are. They just think of themselves as a scientist. So I really think STEAM is important. I also have seen projects that more focus on the art, and the art is what gets people interested in science enough to actually go into the STEM parts. So like murals are a great example of this. When you see a really good STEM mural or a STEM event, you get so interested in STEM. I'll never forget going to one of my conferences, and they started off this STEM conference with this beautiful video outlining the sort of the current state of the field. And there was very little actual content in the video that you would walk away and be like, I feel smarter. It just made you inspired to go and learn more, because it was such a beautifully done video. The sounds, the feeling it gave you, you just felt inspired, and you wanted to talk to people about it.
Yes, I totally agree. And this has actually come up in a couple of the interviews I've done on my podcast, where we talk about creativeness being a key component in all STEM careers, because there seems to be this preconception that people who go into engineering or science or maths or whatever it is, they're not creative people. I know specifically for engineers like me, we were always told that engineers aren't creative people. But the designs and the concepts and the solutions you have to come up with all require you to think really creatively and use that art. So I love that you added the A into your STEAM chapter name. You've obviously had quite a few people put their names forward for your grants. It sounds as if you received a lot more nominations than you had previously expected. What are some examples of some of the projects you've seen?
I'll talk about Hawaii, because I was there for a year, so I can kind of give you a scope of a lot of the projects we funded. We had everything from robotics teams who are working on competitions, and they just needed a little extra injection of cash to sort of finalize their project, and then they would go overseas and present it and compete. We had cultural events where I remember this one university team just wanted to make the community aware of endangered species, or excuse me, now I'm forgetting the name, but invasive species. And they made this really nice calendar, and then each month was a different invasive species, and they sort of published it to the community, and they gave it away for free. So that was really cool. But my favorite project was a woman working on her master's project for NOAA, the agency that works on pretty much where all weather data comes from. She was working on a way to automatically tag plastics on the beach, because apparently NOAA sends out armies of volunteers to go and tag these things manually. So she said, oh, I think I can do this automatically with nothing more than a smartphone and some open source software that I can customize. And she just needed a device. She just needed a few extra things to make that happen. We were a little bit hesitant at first, because we were like, are we just buying a college student an iPhone? But so we reached out to her and we talked to her, and she was like, no, I'm going to donate it to the university. My professor is going to own it. And then it's for the next person. And we were just like, this is amazing. This is literally someone who's taking, this is an agency that is globally recognized and is hugely impactful, and they're still doing things in this very manual way. And she's just a master's student who's like, I can do this better. And all I need is like $800. So we funded her. It was a few months after, but she defended her thesis. And it was awesome. It was just like, it was the exact reason why this foundation is called the Awesome Foundation. It was awesome. Somebody changed a really big part, or did something really impactful with nothing more than probably $800. So neat.
Wow, that's incredible. And Melissa, can you tell us a bit about some of the STEAM chapter grant, what do you call them? Nominations that you've seen?
Yeah.
Applications.
Yeah, absolutely. So with this first round, we got about 70 or 80 applications submitted. And this was without us doing too much promotion and just using the Natural Awesome Foundation brand. But there were things from a college club wanting to start a beehive, some online algorithm games of turning music into math. There were a few robotics competitions coming up, and so some students needed some help to gather supplies to submit that. There were also some art things. I will say we got a diverse amount of applications. Now, something we do look for when we're going through applications is we're looking for funding the actual project. So if someone submits an application and says, hey, I want to go to this conference, can you give me the funds so I can go here and learn? Or travel expenses, something along those lines, aren't as likely to get funded. The one we ended up funding in this last round, we had to have a few discussions among the trustees to kind of decide which one we were going to fund. But the one that did end up winning was a group in Malaysia. They're doing a lot of cool different things. It's primarily female. It's a college group, and they've been doing hackathons. They're trying to engage more of the community to understand what STEM is and get particularly females interested in STEM. So we are really excited to give them the grant, and we're hoping, although it's not required, that they'll give us an update soon of what they end up doing with the money.
Yeah, and the pandemic has made some of them interesting, because we did get some projects submitted that were remote, or that they were going to do digitally. This one, the one that we funded, was in person, so the pandemic has caused them to have delays and such, just because they can't have in-person gatherings. But one of the sort of subtle parts of their application that I personally loved, and why my vote went to them, was they do these STEM-based projects where there's a goal assigned to an optimistic goal to the project. So the example that she gave us, you have to sort of fly this drone in and rescue people from this sort of situation that's been created. And you have to, you know, build the drone, and you have to, you know, do all that stuff. So there's like this, there's all of these little robotics and little pieces to the equation that they have to do, but to complete a task. And what I loved about what they're doing is they're all of the tasks that they have were very techno-optimistic. And I'm going to go on hopefully not too long of a rant here, but one of my big frustrations with modern day television is that every darn show is like super pessimistic about technology. I get very frustrated with, I mean, Black Mirror and all that's a great show. I'm not saying that the content isn't good, but I do feel like when I talk to people, they always go right towards the negatives or the conspiracies of science or the downfalls of it. I'm like, science can be used. There's so many good things about science. Like I would hope everyone can appreciate that. So I really like that this group is just like from a young age teaching kids like, hey, let's use this to solve a real world task that really helps people. And they're doing it and having fun and being creative about it. So it was such a subtle part of the application, but I love that part.
Oh, that's amazing. I would love to learn more about this group. How can people get involved in the STEAM chapter of the Awesome Foundation? If they've listened in today and they're like, I really want to support this, or I've got a project that I'd like to put an application forward for, how can they do that?
So there's a few different ways. The first one I would say is either if you have a project or you know someone who's working on something really awesome that you think would be a great fit for the grant, encouraging them to go to awesomefoundation.org, checking out the STEAM chapter or any of the local chapters, and applying for the grant. The second way to get involved or help us out would be if you're interested or you know someone who's interested in becoming a trustee. So at a minimum, what trustees do is they commit to donating 100 USD a month, once a month, and then collectively meeting with us at our monthly meetings to vote on our top project. If you're in a place where you feel, oh, I don't know that I can do monthly right now, but I might be interested in a one-off donation or interested to learn more at a future date, feel free to reach out to us. We have an email. It is steam, STEAM, at awesomefoundation.org. So if you shoot us an email, that goes directly to myself and Justin, and we generally get back to you in the same day.
I'll add that email address to the show notes. So if anyone didn't catch that, just head on over there and you'll...
Something just to remind everyone, if you have an interest in doing philanthropy, you don't have to be Bill Gates. You don't have to be Warren Buffett. You can start small. And that's how we started this. Both myself, Justin, all the trustees that are currently involved, we just have a heart to want to give and make awesome things happen.
I love that, because often when you do think of philanthropy, I can't even say it, philanthropy, you do think of people like Bill Gates and you think, oh, I won't be able to make a difference until I am a multi-billionaire. But, you know, Justin and Melissa are great role models and proof that you don't have to be Bill Gates. I mean, I don't know how much both of you earn, but I assume it's not quite on the level of Bill Gates just yet.
Not quite.
Yeah, I'm currently in between opportunities, so.
There you go. So, you know, they're a great set of role models to show that you can just be a regular person and make such a huge difference to people's lives.
I started doing this when I had my former job in St. Louis, and now St. Louis is an extremely affordable city to live, but I want to share that I was making probably only $42,000 a year when I started to consider this, and it wasn't something I factored into my budget. It was just something that I was like, if I'm going to do this, I just need to start now. And realistically, if I can't put $100 aside a month for this, then I have bigger budgeting questions in my life that I need to answer. And this was a priority to me. We've talked to a lot of trustees and they say, well, I don't think I can do that right now. And that's fine. I'm not going to tell anyone with their financial situation what they should do with their money. But if it is important to you, whether it's the Awesome Foundation or honestly any philanthropic organization or volunteer or nonprofit, you really do have to just sit down and put in the time to figure out how to give if you want to get involved in that area. Again, that's Awesome Foundation aside, you just have to make it a priority. And for the first few months, it was a little bit annoying having to give $100 out of my pocket because I kept forgetting to budget for it. But then it made me just smarter with my finances. And I just, you know, kept reminding myself of why I'm doing it.
Yeah, definitely. I guess this is very related to some of the stuff I coach women in STEM on, where I think that just as human beings, we love to make things bigger than they actually are. So our challenges or things that we want to do seem like we've got to do 100 steps before we get to be a philanthropist. I still can't say it. Or we have to wait until we're retired to have enough time to volunteer at a soup kitchen, or we have to make this much money. But the fact is, you will never reach that point, because once you reach that point, you'll think, oh, I need more time. I need more money. I can't do this until that. Our brains are wired to put these, barriers in front of us just as an excuse that you can't do it. So whether it's, as you said, if it's important to you, if it's something that's been weighing on your mind and you want to donate time or donate money or donate your resources or skills to a good cause, today's the day to start. Don't wait until something else happens before you're allowed to do it. That's just a rule that you've made up for yourself, really.
Yeah, I always like to relate it to sport. I can't remember a single moment in my life where somebody read how to play a sport before they played the sport, and you just kind of jump in. Like, I didn't read how to kick a soccer ball. I just failed over and over until I learned how to kick a soccer ball. So you will meet people who are all in this together, and you'll build each other up, and you'll never experience that unless you just dive in.
To Justin's point is with the whole, okay, you don't need to read a book before you play a sport or what have you. Even if you do read the book or the how-to before you do something, nothing actually changes until you start taking that action. So if it's something you really want, whatever it is, just go for it. Don't wait for permission.
I think that's the quote of this podcast. That's amazing advice. And sometimes diving in doesn't have to be a massive scary thing. I can guarantee if you think that something is too big for you to do, there is some way that you can chop it down so that it's 1/100th of the size of the challenge you think you're diving into. There's always a super tiny small step in the right direction that you can take. And before you know it, you will have started up your own chapter of the Awesome Foundation.
Well, even going back to when when we were initially discussing starting this chapter, I think we started discussions, what, in January? We're like, yeah, we should do a remote chapter. Oh, but I don't know. We're currently in a pandemic. People are losing their jobs. Do we think people are going to give? How are we going to get 10 people? You know, we could come up with all of these excuses not to do something. But once Justin and I actually said, all right, let's just commit. Let's go. Let's take the action. And we have a weekly meeting where we just take a few actions each time as we slowly grow this organization.
Yeah. And if you didn't take action, that cost would be so much more than what you're risking if you did take action, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I know for me, this has helped me just think about finances in a new way personally. What percentage of my money I do want to give away, or how do I want to deploy it in an effective way? Once I realized what you could do with $1,000, it got me exposed to all these other nonprofits and charities out there that realize you don't need huge amounts of money to do things. And I'll give a shout out to the Effective Altruist movement for this, where it really is, how can you do the most, you know, how can you do the most amount of good with your money? And that starts at a dollar. Them and Give, and I guess I'll give one more plug, Give Directly. They're a great, if your Awesome Foundation is too big of a first step for you, Give Directly is even better, a better way to get involved at the, you know, $1 to $5 level.
Amazing. I'll link to both of those in the show notes as well in case anyone is interested. Okay, I'm going to go on to the finish the sentence round. So Melissa, I'm going to start with you. Can you please finish this sentence? Work should be
enjoyable and challenging.
Oh, love that. How about you, Justin? How would you finish the sentence, work should be?
I'd say it should be educational, it should be stressful, and it should not consume your life.
Ah, stressful but not consume your life. That's an interesting one.
Any tips on how to achieve that?
You have to, well, for me, I'm still learning, so I also want tips. But I know, if you're really learning something new that's challenging, it's going to be stressful. So you should just anticipate that that's going to be your reality if you're really diving into something that's hard.
Do you think there's like a good type of stress and a bad type of stress?
I do. I've always just been like, okay, I'm going to be stressed today. I have a huge to-do list. How do I just make the most, or how do I just do the best of what I have today? For me, I channel people that I respect, who I know who in stressful situations were always calm. One of my former coworkers, I'll just give a shout out to Matt Collins. I don't know if I ever listened to this, but every time I get stressed, I just think about how he would handle problems. He asked a lot of questions, broke down the problem into consumable parts, and he always just stayed very calm. And I've never been good at that. So every time I get stressed, I just think of someone like him who is better at that than me and try to really channel their energy.
Oh, that's such a good tip. Like if you find someone who you can emulate their strengths on, that's a really great way to learn how to do something new, I guess. Mm-hmm. Okay, Melissa, the next question for you, or sentence. One book that everyone should read is?
When to Jump by Mike Lewis. I've read a ton of really good business books, and of course some of the, you know, typical ones, the mainstream ones, but this is one of the ones that I don't think is as well known, but at least for me, really helped me identify that whether you're looking for the next step in your career, the next step in another area of your life, there's never going to be a perfect time. And no one's going to be like, all right, Melissa, it's time to go. You should go to the next step now. And you just have to give yourself permission and go when it's right.
Wow, that's so powerful. And I can tell that that book has had such an impact on you based on our conversation today. It sounds like you've really taken that philosophy and applied it to all areas of your life, which is great to see.
Yes, absolutely. The best time when to jump, always now.
And Justin, one book that everyone should read is?
The Wisdom of Insecurity by the philosopher Alan Watt. It's not a jargon-rich book of philosophical terms. It's a very easy read. It's had the most impact on my life. Probably the only book I've read more than once. And as I every time I read it, I connect with a different chapter, and I get that, you know, that really intense back sweat where you're reading, you're going, ooh, these are my insecurities written in words, and I don't like this. Like, so that one has definitely made me come face to face with things that I know I'm doing but probably shouldn't. It's not a self-help book at all. It's just a book that really brings out the human condition in the Western world of sometimes working 16-hour days and never really thinking about what you should do the next day because you're always just drowned in a to-do list. So it's a very good book for, I think, the modern world where I think workaholic is sometimes promoted and maybe shouldn't be.
I have not heard of both of those books. I'm very keen to have a read of them. I'll add them to my ever-growing book list. And can I just make it be known that I don't know what you mean when you said, you know, that intense back sweat you get when you're reading? Never experienced that.
I get that anxious sweat when I read something and I'm like, oh God, like I just get all of this anxiety. I should say it's not from reading. It's from the anxiety when I hear something that I'm like, ooh, he just called me out and he didn't even know it.
It's like the thing you've been avoiding and then it's in the book.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I thought this was my little secret. Turns out most humans have this and I should probably deal with it.
Maybe I haven't been courageous enough in my reading if I haven't experienced the back sweat yet.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe that's just the pile. Maybe it's just my butt. I'm giving a lot of personal information.
The next one is, the one thing I'd tell my younger self would be?
I think to just go for it and not wait for permission from others. If there was a goal I wanted to do, or so for example, I spent the last 2 years abroad in Australia. I'd had that dream since I was a little kid, and I was just always waiting for either a company to relocate me or some other opportunity, something I would depend on someone else or something else, until I just realized to just go for it.
Amazing. And to be honest, if you hadn't gone to Australia and met my friend Dana, who is also a trustee of your STEAM chapter, we would not be having this conversation and interview right now.
Exactly. And I would also tell myself, everything happens for a reason. You might not know the reason now, but later on, you know, you never know where connection will bring you, whether it was me meeting Dana or Justin and I connecting. You know, you don't know what the future holds, but it's exciting.
Yes, that's so true. I actually talked about that in last week's podcast episode. It was one of my 20 reflections from 2020. Okay, Justin, one thing I'd tell my younger self would be?
Always prioritize adventure, which is very similar to the reasons Melissa gave. I think if you have a safety net, and that safety net can be that you have a home to come to, like a family or something who will always take you if you screw up, you can go out and really try to do something with your life. You'll quickly realize it's not that hard. It's actually really easy. Just go out and always prioritize an adventure, whether it's your career, whether it's actually an adventure, whatever it is, just try something and you'll figure it out as you go. And you really can't, you know, you really can't fail as long as you have a few a few hundred bucks to fly home and live at home or something.
Okay, and then the final sentence, Melissa, women in STEM should all know that.
It's important to always be brave, and you can do anything. Don't allow someone to tell you you can't do it. And if they do tell you you can't do it and you want to do it, just go for it anyway and prove them wrong. You can do anything.
I love that you use the word brave. I think a lot of people tell women in STEM to be more confident, but that sort of implies that you shouldn't have any fear. Whereas you use the word brave, meaning you have to be courageous, even in the face of fear. If you are a little bit afraid of doing something, be brave and just see what happens.
And it might be uncomfortable, and that's okay. Just be brave and go for it and don't give up.
And Justin, what's something that you would like to tell women in STEM? So women in STEM should all know that.
That they're not alone in any part of their career. And that's my advice just for everybody. There's very little things you will experience that probably someone else hasn't gone through before. For me personally, I know I don't actually even use the website Reddit like most people use it. I use it purely as a place to go ask very personal questions anonymously. And I always encourage my friends, women or men, to find those anonymous forums. And if you are struggling with something that you're uncomfortable talking with someone out loud about, go do a quick Google search and find someone else who's probably asked that same question, or ask it yourself. For everything from negotiating salaries in very specific fields to legal questions to everything. I've gotten so much help from anonymous people around the world. I could walk by them and not even know that they were the ones who changed my trajectory or changed something in my life dramatically. And it honestly takes less than 10 minutes to come up with a good question and ask someone. And it's amazing how helpful the internet is. You just have to find the right channels. But yeah, mine is Reddit, but there's many others out there. You're not alone in any problem you face. Just ask the question. And if you are truly alone, you will be surprised at how many people will try to help you find an answer to a unique problem.
Wow, I've gotten goosebumps hearing you talk about that. That is definitely something I personally have never thought about doing, in terms of reaching out anonymously to a group of people who are also anonymous. I think that's such a great tip. And also, if anyone's trawling Reddit later and sees a question about back sweat and reading, you'll know who it is.
That's awesome.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being on my show today. It's been such an insightful chat. I know we came here to talk all about the STEAM chapter of the Awesome Foundation, but in such a short period of time, we have covered so many deep topics, and I have learned so much from both of you today. Is there anything that we haven't spoken about today yet that you'd like to add?
The only thing I would say right now, we're in such a unique situation with the pandemic where you have this ability, everyone has this ability to be on the same playing field. Before, me not being in San Francisco for my job was terrible, because most of my colleagues were meeting in person and I was sort of this odd person out here. Nowadays, everybody's meeting remotely. So for the first time, I think ever in my life, everybody is competing on the same playing field with a webcam. So you can reach out to people on LinkedIn, or you can attend conferences, you can try to get speaking events at conferences, because traditionally, it's hard to get money to, become a speaker at a conference. Now there's virtual conferences everywhere. There's podcasts, there's just people on LinkedIn. You can just reach out so easily now. Expect to get no response, maybe 9 times out of 10, but your goal is just to get one person, you respect, or one conference you want to speak at. And that can literally change your life. Now is just such a perfect time to find ways to get involved in areas that you might have been hindered by before because of your location.
The thing I would add is, I think similar to what Justin said, now is literally a perfect time. If there's someone you've been wanting to reach out to because you're interested, maybe you're currently a woman in STEM, but you want to pivot your career, or you're thinking about a career in STEM and you're doing something totally unrelated to STEM, and you're like, well, I can't do that because I'm a teacher, or I'm a nurse, or I'm in some sort of field that isn't directly related to STEM. Just reach out to someone who might be in something you're interested in and see where it goes. People are, as Justin said, more than willing to help you. And if you can't find someone, email us at steam@awesomefoundation.org and we'll help you find someone to chat to.
Oh, thank you so much for offering that help. And you've both given such great advice there in terms of just going out there and using the best of a terrible situation. Obviously, no one wants to be in a pandemic, but there's always positives to find. And so you may as well leverage the fact that everyone's stuck at home, everyone's connected via internet only at the moment. So definitely use that. Now, if anyone is listening in and you're thinking, I really want to support the STEAM chapter of the Awesome Foundation, you obviously have Justin and Melissa's contact details. The email address is in the show notes. But if you don't feel that you can donate money at the moment, you might know someone who might be in a position to, who might want to do that. So please go ahead and share the fact that STEAM chapter of Awesome Foundation are looking for more trustees. Share this podcast episode with them if they want to hear more from Melissa and Justin. And if you want to do a one-off donation, I know it is coming up to December, so you might be thinking about New Year's resolutions. This might be the perfect foundation for you to get your fundraising act in gear for next year and, funnel it into this incredible, incredible organization. Thank you so much, Melissa and Justin, for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. This has been really great.
I had so much fun interviewing Melissa and Justin, and I had a smile on my face the whole time I was replaying the interview and editing this podcast. A couple of things that I took away from our conversation are that if you've got an idea to do something and you've never done it before or you have no idea how to start, you can just figure it out as you go along. And secondly, that you don't have to do it all alone. My favorite quote from Melissa, she said that nothing actually changes until you start taking that action. And another one was, so if it's something you really want, just go for it. Don't wait for permission. Justin also made such a great point when he said that even if you don't know anyone who can help you with your current situation or you feel a bit awkward asking these questions, there are so many anonymous forums out there full of helpful people. I think sometimes the internet gets a bit of a bad rap, but as he said, if you find the right forums, find the right platforms and groups of people to talk to, they'll really help you and they will do whatever they can to give you the information you need to make good decisions. I hope you're feeling as inspired as I was when I jumped off this call with Melissa and Justin after listening to this podcast episode. If you did enjoy today's show, I would absolutely love it if you could give it a quick rating and review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. This helps other people just like you find inspiring messages from my amazing guests on how to be a STEMinist. Alternatively, if you don't use Apple Podcasts or iTunes, give us a quick shout out on Instagram. Take a screenshot of this episode that you're listening to right now and tag me in that post. I can't wait to see you again next week for my final episode of 2020, this crazy year. I really look forward to sharing with you my goals and visions for 2021 with you in next week's episode. Until then, take care.